Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, September 25th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. Sitka officials want more state money to help raise the Blue Lake Dam. Hydropower expansion tops a list of about 30 projects targeted for legislative grants and other state funding. Sitka's assembly will take a first look at that list at this evening's meeting. Lawmakers have already contributed about $50 million towards the project. Officials hope for another $43 million. If approved, the state would fund about two-thirds of the total costs. Construction bids recently came in almost twice the $50 million estimate. The project will raise the dam and increase the amount of power generated year-round. The next item on the legislative priority list would help retire debt on the Green Lake Hydro Project. Officials are seeking $42 million. They say power rates could go up by more than half without state assistance. Other projects on the list would help develop an alternative drinking water source, replace Sitka's transient float, expand shore facilities for cruise ship passengers, and build a new playground. Assembly members will also take up plans for affordable housing projects at the old city shop site. They will also hear updates on Kettleson Memorial Library's expansion and Centennial Hall renovation projects. The meeting begins at 6 p.m. this evening in the Assembly Chambers. We'll broadcast it here live. Scientists have been monitoring an invasive species of sea squirt growing on the bottom of Whiting Harbor in Sitka. It's called Didenum vexillum, or DVEX for short. Contributing reporter Ellen Chenoweth tells us about the bizarre biology of this invasive species and how new understandings might help scientists get rid of it.
Sarah Cohen has built her career studying invasive marine species. But even this San Francisco State University professor admits to some unique hurdles when working with Sitka's most unwelcome visitor, DVEX.
The first thing we faced after kind of brainstorming about different things to try for killing them was, gee, how do we assess if they're dead or not? And that's just, you know, if you're used to working on fish, that's not something that you get challenged by.
Still, Cohen has found some level of appreciation for the curious life form.
Some of us think it's gorgeous, but...
But to the untrained eye, DVEX looks like something only a mother could love.
It was described as sea vomit by some people in Alaska after seeing the way that it grows is these dripping mats, kind of whitish to yellowish to tan or grayish, and it just coats the surfaces of things on the bottom or net pens or anything it grows on. And as it gets heavy, it forms these dripping, they look like stalactites coming down from the roof of a cave or something.
DVEX looks like a single uniform blob, but it's actually a tightly knit group of thousands of tiny animals. Each animal is about the size of a pencil lead. They're called tunicates because they're nestled under a shared membrane, or tunic. These animals spend their entire adult lives in one place, latched onto a rock, net, or the hull of a ship. They feed by filtering microscopic food particles out of the water. This particular invader has been known to science for only about the last 10 years. In that time, DVEX has astonished biologists with its ability to thrive in vastly different environments. Thought to have originated in Japan, DVEX has shown up in New Zealand, both coasts of the United States, British Columbia, and Northern Europe. And like many marine invasives, it has probably been making its way from port to port by hitching a ride on shipping vessels. Once established, it has proven that it can carpet the sea floor, covering thousands and thousands of acres of underwater real estate. Marnie Chapman is an associate professor of marine biology at the University of Alaska Southeast. Chapman got to see how fast DVEX colonies can grow firsthand. She had been using a mesh bag to transport samples when she noticed a few tiny fragments left behind.
And it was amazing. In 2 weeks it was much larger. 2 weeks after that it was much larger. In about, 2.5 months, it was huge. It covered the whole laundry bag. It was dripping down from the laundry bag and dripping down to the bottom below out there at Whiting.
This dripping is the main reason why eradicating DVEX is so difficult. Once a fragment breaks off and lands on a new spot, it can actually seed an entire new colony. In fact, the way DVEX grows and spreads reminded Chapman of a more notorious blight in the world of biology.
I was taking a course, a graduate course on cancer biology at the time, and it just struck me some of the similarities, the quickness with which it spreads, the way that it doesn't respect boundaries within the area that it's growing, and just sort of its ability to morph into different shapes and take over its area.
Researchers have discovered a few DVEX weaknesses that may guide eradication efforts. The Smithsonian Environmental Research Center conducted some experiments in Sitka to see how well DVEX could survive under different challenging conditions. A research center biologist, Linda McCann, subjected pieces of DVEX to low oxygen, fresh water, extra salty water, or bleach. According to McCann, plain old sea salt, but at much higher concentrations than you typically find in the ocean, was a surprisingly effective weapon against DVEX, at least on a small scale.
This last summer, we went back and tried to scale up and do this on the seafloor, and we found that even trying to do this in a very small area, that there were some issues with the salt dissipating very rapidly, so that the salinity would go back down to the natural salinity very quickly. So that's something that we would have to address.
Humans have found some help getting rid of DVEX. Chapman and other local Sitkins, including Carrie Hisaoka, Paul Norwood, and Jasmine Shaw, have documented a snail species that feeds on living DVEX. Scientists want to know a lot more about how DVEX grows, spreads, and affects local species. An important question for the Sitka area is how it will affect the survival and development of herring eggs that may settle on it during spawning. Linda Shaw works for the National Marine Fisheries Service in Juneau. She says DVEX research is ongoing, but it's not her top priority.
And that's sort of a principle of invasive species management. You want to control it first and then research it.
Chapman agrees her priority is getting DVEX out of Sitka.
The more esoteric aspects of its biology might be fascinating, and I'd love to study it forever, but somewhere else other than here in Sitka.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ellen Chenoweth.
A report that could change the way cruise ships handle wastewater is nearly done. A state science advisory panel met last week in Juneau and shared some of its work with the public. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Alaska's Cruise Ship Science Advisory Panel has spent about 2 years looking at options for cleaning up wastewater. That includes discharges of harmful bacteria, dissolved metals, and other pollutants. Some ships already use systems that can meet elevated standards. Some do not, while others only discharge outside state enforcement boundaries. The 11-member panel finished its work on a preliminary report during its Juneau meeting, but the document still must undergo review. Division of Water Deputy Director Andrew Sayers-Fay says he hopes it's available to the public by November 1st. State Cruise Ship Program Manager Rob Edwardson says it's an important step in a process started by the legislature in 2009.
The Science Advisory Panel is using the preliminary report as a tool to assist and advise the commissioner on his report to the legislature that's due January 1st of 2013.
A technology open house that was part of the science panel meeting presented the history of cruise ships in Alaska and current water quality issues. Edwardson says one is exploration of current cruise ship systems.
The second is the availability of additional methods that are economically feasible and technologically effective. And the third is the environmental cost and benefit of implementing any additional methods that they may find.
The feasibility issue is part of the legislature's charge to the panel. That led to examination of water cleaning systems not yet used on the ships. Sitka's Steve Reifenstuhl represents the United Fishermen of Alaska on the science panel.
We have looked at technology that it's used in land-based facilities. There isn't technology that has been used on cruise ships that can do that at this point. That's not to say that it's not feasible in the future at a very high cost.
Higher standards were called for in a 2006 cruise ship initiative approved by voters, which also created a passenger head tax. The panel was established as part of a compromise that delayed full enforcement. Cruise lines argued the standards could be met by allowing discharges to be diluted through mixing zones. Basically, that meant sampling water a distance from the ship rather than from the discharge pipe itself. Seattle environmental compliance analyst Lincoln Lohr represents the industry on the panel. He says water cleaning systems in use now are about as good as it gets.
I don't see that there's convincing information on the effectiveness of these additional add-ons to consistently meet the water quality criteria at the end of the pipe.
Mixing zones or other forms of dilution are methods opposed by clean water activists. Reifenstuhl, who holds the panel's fishing industry seat, says he's optimistic about the final results.
The goal is to protect Alaska's waters, and I think that the science panel is going to come out with a report that will do that.
The panel's report to the legislature is formally a preliminary document, but it's unclear what might change between its release and the deadline for a final report 2 years in the future. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
For the first time ever, Mount Edgecombe High School will have a voice in student government at the University of Alaska Southeast. Sam Clark is from Dillingham. He is a senior at Edgecombe, and he takes some classes at the UAS Sitka campus. At the beginning of the school year, he was elected vice president of Student Government Association. Government advisor April Suske says Edgecombe students take classes at UAS Sitka and deserve to be represented.
They're probably, of all of the students, they're probably the most active and the most visible on this campus on a daily basis. I mean, we have 100 or more students on an ongoing basis that are from MEHS, and I'm just so excited because Sam Clark is such a wonderful student. He's just so happy to be part of this. I really see him going places in the future politically. I really think he will.
It's kind of scary, but it's fun at the same time.
And that's Sam Clark.